Hey y'all, this is Lou Temple. You know me as Axel on The Walking Dead, and soon as Psycho Head from Rob Zombie's new movie, soon to be released, 31. And you're listening to the Horribly Awkward podcast. Keep tuning in. You follow me?
Last but not
Meatloaf.
This messenger.
Hey there, rock stars. This is Josh Redding.
And Ray Smith.
From the Tangent Break podcast. Let's put life on pause because it's time for a tangent.
No. It's time for Horribly Awkward.
Hey there, everybody. This is Dave from Bad Cop Show. You are listening to the Horribly Awkward podcast live from Sean's mother's basement.
Hey, hey. This is a dragonfly from Puregasmic Love podcast. You're listening to the Horribly Awkward podcast. Yes, you are.
Hello, everybody. This is Jerry from Bad Cop, Bad Cop Show. You're listening to the Horribly Awkward podcast, a member of the great and stellar
BS Podcast Network.
The BS Podcast Network.
The BS Podcast Network.
Mr. Temple, come in.
Hello. Hello, Sean, Scott. Hey.
Hey, so you're here to, you're here for the role. You wanted to be the serial killer in our new movie, which our title is still undetermined.
Yes, absolutely. I'm well prepared for that. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It's great. Go ahead and why are you staring at my friend here?
Not for a particular reason at all. Got short hair.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for noticing the haircut. I do appreciate it. I just had it done yesterday, actually.
Seems like you're a hat kind of a guy, and now with this fresh look, I noticed no hat at all, and maybe it's affected your relationship efforts.
Scott, are you feeling uncomfortable? Because I know everyone, you know, everyone notices your nose is like three times the size of a normal nose.
Well, that's true, but he just complimented me on my hair. I feel pretty good, even though it felt a little like a dig, too, because it's apparently getting in the way of my love life, but...
Well, no, maybe not. You know, could work in France with the nose, but if you're trying to conceal, you might consider a fancy mustache.
Okay.
Fancy mustache.
Scott, come over here real quick. Scott.
Okay. All right.
I don't know, man. He keeps staring at you. I mean, I know your nose is big. I mean, should we bring it up to see if he says anything about it? Because... I don't know. He wants to work for us. He wants to be. He's perfect for the role. But he's got the look. He's got the sound.
Yeah, but he's giving good advice, man. He's like he recognizes I have a problem, and he's given me a suggestion to make it better. Isn't that kind of what we want here?
So you consider your nose as a problem?
Well, yeah, dude. Okay. I'm running into doors and stuff all the time.
Okay, let's go ask him for some advice.
Okay, cool.
Mr. Temple, so...
Yes.
We've decided that we're definitely going to give you the part. You've got the look, you've got the sound. You're the man for the job. What we need to know
first
is...
First job all week. I'm thrilled.
Every once in a while we get behind as extras. We get behind the camera and we're in there.
You too?
Yeah, we get in there.
In the scene.
We'll get in there. But every time we put Scott on camera, everyone notices his big nose. Do you have any advice where we can kind of counterbalance that with another feature?
Yeah, I do. I like to play a game called Nose Lou. And this is a game about, you know, very few places you go and someone doesn't know Lou. And maybe we can get Scott up to speed in having a large following of people who won't be offended by his nose.
Okay.
And a lot of his friends and followers can be okay with Nose Scott.
Okay. Yeah. That's...
Maybe we should change it to Scott Nose. Maybe Scott Knows Best.
True. Should we put out like a Craigslist ad for this? Because, you know,
Scott knows best. There are no small parts, Scott.
Well, that's not true.
And with the short hair, you're going to be happy for that.
Maybe we could like do some marketing. Like I could sell some real estate space, you know, for different advertisements or something like that. Like Pennzoil right across there.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
We could like a stadium.
Yeah.
It could be a GoFundMe, Indiegogo.
There we go.
Nose space.
Yeah, it could totally fit like an entire website like right across there.
It would be great. GoDaddy, GoScottDaddy.com.
Okay, so we're going to conduct this interview through the form of a podcast. Let's all sit down at this table. I got mics set up. You guys ready to roll? Let's put the super big, let's put Lou's super big hat on Scott. Maybe that'll counterbalance. We won't notice the nose as much.
Look, I've always been a guy with odd features. That's my heritage, and I try to enhance or decoy them as much as possible. And that takes a lot more energy than it serves, believe it.
Yes, sir. All right, Lou, let's get ready. Let's do this.
Hey, Norma, give us a horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward. Horribly awkward.
That's horrible.
I can't even control myself. It's so horribly awkward.
This is so awkward.
It's so awkward.
This is horribly awkward. No one off.
Horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward.
Horribly awkward.
Sean, dude, you're horribly awkward.
Sean, I know you think this is weird, but it's not as weird as you think it is, dude.
Don't do that. It's awkward.
Welcome to Horribly Awkward, episode 46. I'm your host, Sean. As always, another podcast, another awesome guest, another killer show delivered to your ear holes. If you like what you hear, please tell a friend, tell your grandma, tell a neighbor, because word of mouth is a beautiful thing, and I'm not talking about your booty. You guys, we have a voicemail number. It is 510-600-3475. So send me your voicemails. I would love to hear them. And I definitely would love to play them on the show. So you can do that and we will play them anytime you send them to me. I do not have any voicemails today, but if you guys also want to reach out to me the old-fashioned way, you can at horriblyawkwardpodcast@gmail.com. So on today's show, I got my good buddy Scott. You guys all know him. He's no stranger. He's been around here pretty often from the Hollywood Outsider and from the Gaming Outsider podcast. Scott, dude, what is up, man?
Not much, man. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing pretty good. It's another hot day in Fresno, and I know people are sick and tired of me saying the heat.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired of it too, man. I'm in Rockford, and I'm enjoying the heat. I love it. I dig it so much, and I want it to get hotter, and I'm tired of everybody complaining about it and cranking the AC down in the movie theaters. I got to bring a jacket to go to the movie theaters in the middle of July. It's awful.
Dude, I'll pay sometimes to go to the theater just to get really cold AC for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. So, Scott, dude, we got an awesome freaking guest today. I'm so excited for this. This has been in the works for like 3 months. I've been trying to get, now we're here. I got him on the podcast. This is fantastic. You ready to roll?
I'm ready.
Dude, so you guys, on today's show, he has done it all from TV to movies and a lot of them. From the Walker, Texas Ranger to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Newtown Boys, Deja Vu, Domino, 21 Grams, Rob Zombie's Halloween, and one of my favorite horror movies, The Devil's Rejects, Unstoppable, Rango, The Lone Ranger, guys, I can go on forever, Wicked Blood, another fantastic movie, AMC's The Walking Dead, you guys, everybody, put your hands together, the man, the myth, the legend, Lou Temple. Lou, what is up?
Hey, Scott, good to be here with you today, and it's horribly awkward to be here on the Horribly Awkward podcast, but I'm feeling awkward-rific, and it's good to be here. Thanks. And we're moderate heat and guilty sunny Southern California, so but I feel you in Fresno, that's high degree. I'm sure in Rockford you're happy with some warmth, Scott, and our friends down south are probably experiencing a lot of humidity about now. So,
oh yeah, some of them are talking about heat index being up to like 108 in some places, 115. So
yeah, that's good. That's good wine cellar weather, you know.
Yeah,
cave dweller weather.
Dude, yeah, you know, like where Scott's at, he gets the snow and shit, and I've literally never been in or seen snow up close.
Sean, I liked how you introduced the Newtown Boys. I've never heard it presented that way, but now that I hear that and I look back.
The Newton Boys.
Newton. But the Newtown Boys is perfect because it was a film about a band of brothers who were notorious outlaws in Texas, and it was all made up of budding young Hollywood movie stars, and they entirely could have been a boy band, from Matthew McConaughey to Skeet Ulrich to Ethan Hawke, Dwight Yoakam, Vincent D'Onofrio. I mean, that whole, that would have been an awesome boy band, the Newtown Boys.
Yeah, I totally read that wrong. I was trying to
so
go.
Perfect, though. It's so ideal.
Newtown's back. All right. Dump, 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 dump.
Like it could have been Richard Linklater was doing it, so it seems like he must have scooped something there for School of Rock. I get it. Yeah, that's
you got
great.
You got the look, man. You got that boy band look, Lou.
I'm feeling it. Yeah, I could be the boy band's bus driver.
Yeah, that's gotta be awesome.
Boy bands don't even take buses anymore. Actually, probably no one takes buses anymore. Everybody Ubers. You think rock bands Uber from town to town?
Yeah,
that would be an expensive Uber.
Yeah, but you know. the rock stars. That's
true.
That's the decadence of these days. Rock stars is Uber and yogurt, frozen
oh,
yogurt.
Yes, I love that frozen yogurt. I pile so much candy on that shit. It's not even healthy anymore.
They just weigh it. They don't even charge you for it. They just weigh it.
Yeah, I always feel gypped, though. I'm like, oh, you know, you want to go for the light stuff. You want to go for the fluffy marshmallows, which cost you nothing. You start putting, like, chunks of chocolate on there. M&M's going to cost you more money.
Yeah.
I love it with gummy bears. Those are heavy.
Gummy bears are great. You know, the gummy bears in Colorado are particularly interesting.
They're, really?
Yeah, based on, yeah, they've
oh, you're talking about the herbs.
Yeah, little edible there.
Would you like a gummy bear, Lou? And 30 minutes later, you're just like, what?
Yeah, I watched that happen to a lot of people recently at a convention. It was hilarious. It was
hilarious.
They're free thinkers, you know, and when they say just eat a little bit, that's what they mean. You know, they're not kidding. So Colorado's done good with their forward-thinking, you know, commerce of their cannabis, right?
Yeah, that stuff's great for the state and taxes. And
yeah, that's the point. There's schools and roads, and they're out of debt. We could do that in California.
Yeah, there's just so many crazy people who would abuse it and just be eating a handful of gummy bears and driving a bus.
Yeah. Nope, which no one would be on, by the way. No, because everybody wants to be a rock star, right?
But
we all got reasons for that. Now I'm sort of riffing on Mr. Jones, which is the song from Adam's
Mr.
band.
Mr. Jones.
What's the name of that band?
Are we thinking the same?
No.
What's the name?
Yeah, Adam, and he had, it was not like the Blues Travelers, but... 90s, he had dreadlocks. Mr. Jones and Me. Mr. Jones and Me.
Counting Crows.
Thank you. Okay, good.
There you go. You guys are way better than I am. I suck with names and titles. You know, like...
And reading.
Nowadays with
like
music...
You're good with a list in front of you.
Nowadays, since we're always on the go and we have all of our music on our phones and shit, I never even look at the titles of songs anymore. I couldn't tell you what song... I know what they sound like. I know the lyrics, right. But I couldn't tell you the title.
That's sad because Justin Bieber, you know, he kind of puts it right out there on the, you know, is it too late to say I'm sorry? Just sorry.
Of all the things I expected to hear you talk about today, man, Justin Bieber was at the way bottom of the list.
I know. Awesome. That always surprises and or disappoints most people. And at the time I was doing Lone Ranger, I had no idea who that guy was, but Johnny Depp's daughter was probably right in the wheelhouse for being a... And Justin was at the height of his popularity, apparently.
Yeah, Johnny Depp's daughter, she's starting to, you know, do acting as well with, like, Kevin Smith's daughter, which on the Yoga Hosers. That's going to be a cool movie.
Yoga Hosers.
Hosers. Yoga Hosers. Hosers.
Yeah, that was at Sundance, and I was at Sundance with that this year. And Johnny came out publicly at some point and said, I'm a believer. And I thought that was... both very cool and very sellout, but it seems good. It seems perfect. But we were at Sundance, and Johnny's daughter and Kevin was there, and Johnny was there with Lily Rose, and I was there with Rob Zombie for his new movie, 31.
Yes, dude. We got to talk about that because I just watched the trailer, and I've been so excited about this. I love Rob Zombie's way of making movies.
Yeah, this is his new... Mass mayhem visually visceral content, just unnerving presentation. It is, I think, for all of his fans and for anybody that's a fan of violence, nobody will be disappointed. It's not an easy ride. It's difficult, and it was difficult to make. It was difficult to watch. I mean, if you're not prepared, it doesn't have what I would say the humor that Devil's Rejects has. So there's not like any Tutti Frutti, or there's no "What's wrong, kid? Don't you like clowns?" There's none of that. But it's full on, just unrelenting violence, and it's turned out well. So it comes out September the 16th at a theater near you.
Oh yes,
and it's great. That trailer's really great.
It is a pretty cool trailer.
I love everyone. In hell, everyone loves popcorn. I love that quote. So this is great, and everyone's really great in it. Obviously, Rob does his thing. It's very visually stimulating. It's incredibly graphic, and it'll surprise you. And it doesn't really give you any breaks. You know, you're on like, oh my God, get me out of this, get me out of this. Hope they make it. Oh shoot, you know. And then here comes the next thing. I reference it like if you were gonna make in a terrarium, put like a tarantula and a scorpion and some red ants and some hornets. And a rattlesnake and a rat, and then just for good measure, a little baby potbelly pig, and just shake all that up
shake
and just
it up.
See where they all landed. They wouldn't leave each other alone, and that's sort of the tone. It's very mean, this movie. It's
awesome. Really, yeah, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I mean, I remember because I'm good friends with Sean Freeman and Normie, Matt, yeah. Ted from ZombieCast. So, well, last time you were on there, you had talked about, like, not much about the movie because there wasn't much to know. But I was like, yeah. I want to know more.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, I think the movie in and of itself is fairly, you know, simple. But what comes of the movie is not. So, we never see like if bad things pit themselves against each other, or like the killers have to survive. Everyone has to survive. So you start to get a sense of, oh my God, what lengths will they go to just to take the next breath? And it's just animalistic. It's very interesting.
Yeah, how'd you feel all dressed up like that in the little shorts and the chainsaw and the mask?
Bob was interesting because he said, you know, when I put on makeup and go do my show, I feel like an entirely different guy. And he's absolutely right. You don't feel yourself. So you're able to give yourself the freedom to go do some of the things that you are being asked to do, which aren't very normal. And so I did like the idea that person was someone else, but then getting rid of that person for months later is very difficult. But physically and emotionally and mentally, spiritually, all those things that make up the human experience, this movie was incredibly challenging. I think for everybody, I think for Rob and Sherry, obviously, and all of us that had to do what we had to do. But as always, for Rob Zombie, we brought it, you know, full on and didn't leave anything back. So I think the audience is going to really appreciate it. But, yeah, it was difficult. It wasn't easy. And, you know, all of a sudden you're not wearing any clothes or very little. And you
What's
realize,
that like?
Well, you feel like a girl because everyone's looking at you. And all of a sudden I realized, everyone's looking at my ass. I don't really care about anything else, but I could tell everyone's checking out my ass, you know, or that's what it felt like. So
you're like, hello, my eyes are up here.
Yeah, I sort of get a sense of what it might be like to be a lady type. And and I have much more respect for that. But, you know, you kind of put it out there, and then when you allow yourself to be okay with that, it just goes from one step to the next. Well, now I'm okay carrying a chainsaw. Now I'm okay saying these awful things to this person and doing these awful things with this person. Hey, I just gave my permission carte blanche to be the worst thing I've ever done.
And, that's awesome. Dude, I love Rob Zombie's style of movie making. Yeah. I absolutely love the way he does violence. Devil's Rejects is really my all-time favorite horror movie because it's so violent and kind of funny at the same time, and it puts you on the killer side. You're rooting for them, like, kill these motherfuckers, get them.
Yeah. You get a sense of you get caught in the moment, and you're able to experience the moment from different perspectives, and typically because the story's being told typically from the protagonist's view or the bad guy, you're taking the ride. And this is told that way too, except that the bad guy finds himself in peril in and of itself. And so the world gets spun really quick and you don't know who's good or who's bad or what they're going to do.
That's awesome.
And so it leaves you a little unbalanced, which is great. And as you said, Rob's really good at violence, and he doesn't use a lot of CGI effects in this movie, none. So, you know, everything is in camera. And so when there's blood or something splatters or someone gets cut, it's really an in-camera technique. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of skill. And so those are, you know, I think those things pay off because what happens when you're in the moment with those things, your work is better. It's really hard to die on a green screen. Being killed by a Tyrannosaurus Rex because it's not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a tennis ball biting you, which is ridiculous, but Shia LaBeouf's good at it.
Shia LaBeouf.
So yeah, it's going to be great. So we were there at Sundance with it. It got a great response. It was interesting because Sundance typically has a very artistic type of introspective audience, and then all Rob's people came and just, you know, attacked Sundance and made it a lot of fun. So it was good. And it'll be out September the 16th.
Oh, I'm really stoked. I want to talk a little bit about your scene in Devil's Rejects because it's one of my favorite scenes in that movie. And I'm not talking about your face being peeled, but
no, that was a lot of work. I'm sure you've seen the 30 Days in Hell behind the scenes, and I was trying to make it as difficult for Bill Moseley as he was making it on all of us. So, you know, I would spit as much blood in his face as I could on that scene. And then, of course, we'd have to start the scene all over again, which means that he'd have to get entirely cleaned up, everything cleaned up out of his hair, and he'd be, you know, just so angry with me. And
yes, I love hearing that kind of stuff.
And I would just do it all again just to make it particularly frustrating for him. But
he enjoyed it.
I did, yeah. Bill's such a great guy. I mean, I adore Bill and always have, and it was... You know, it was crunchy. We were out there in Palmdale, which is, you know, in the high desert outside of Los Angeles. It was smoking hot and unpleasant in this shitty chicken ranch that was dirty and dusty and smelled terrible. And we were there 3 days doing, you know, that scene. But the scene you're probably talking about is in the Kahiki Palms Motel, which was also
in the hotel with the gun. I was actually talking about that one that we were just talking about when you had hit Otis. I think it was like was it a branch or a wooden pipe?
It was a 2x4 that just
2x4.
Not, you know, it hadn't been nailed onto the fence that we were walking past. So
yeah, I almost got him.
Well, we got a good. That was the whole point. Which was the great thing about that movie is all the characters had arcs, really complete arcs, even the smallest characters, and you got to experience their lives, unfortunately, in full because their lives, most of us, were ending. So for Adam Banjo, you know, a lot of bravado about the guys in Ruggsville, they can kiss my ass. They're just trying to sell TV dinners, you know. They ain't nothing but a bunch of chicken shit cocksuckers, cornhole livestock. To when they show up, he kind of, you know, puts on his wife's skirt. You know, he throws up after they pop poor Jimmy the roadie. And then he has to rise up and put his pants back on and fight Otis with his buddy Roy and it looks like they're going to get the upper hand, and then they don't. It spins on them, and they both die, but at least they go out in a blaze of glory fighting for their lives. So these were that's sort of a complete story arc that Rob's really good and allowed us to tell. You know, I came to Rob with Adam Banjo some ideas, and he was really great about letting us play those through. And then we care more about those characters, and then we care about them dying, and then somehow it attaches us to the villains, because when Freebird comes on and they're getting shot up like Bonnie and Clyde, we feel bad then for them.
Yeah, right? That's crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's good stuff there. So we had choreographed that scene, the fight scene, for days with our stunt coordinator, who was Kane Hodder, that you know. And Kane had been Jason Voorhees, the original,
all
those years from Friday the 13th. And so he was really good about making sure that not only did the fight scenes look great, but also that we were safe. And in one of the scenes, Otis, Bill Moseley's character, pulls a knife from the sheath on his calf and stabs me in the groin. And ooh. We had a retractable blade on a stunt knife. And in this one, it was an insert shot where Bill was just going to pull the knife up to show the blade before stabbing and then cut. But Rob, the scene was going unexpectedly well, and Rob didn't call cut. And Kane came running in and stopped the scene, and Rob was, you know, surprised. Why did you do that? And then, but thankfully he did. Otherwise, I'd have been castrated. So I give Kane Hodder the credit for my family business.
Dude, I love that scene. Bill Moseley's line is just like, hey, God, strike me on the back of my head like with lightning. And you want to see badass, motherfucker? I'll show you badass. I absolutely love that scene. And like, yeah, oh, Lou, get him, Lou.
There's a lot of energy in that scene. And a lot of that energy is built out of a level of frustration and exhaustion and just pent up anxiety and just real emotion, I guess. And not that anyone was mad at anybody per se, but at that point we'd made a lot of the movie and we were all tired as hell and hot and thirsty and dry and dehydrated and sunburnt and heat exposed and everything. So that shit was just coming out raw and real.
Yeah, I love
and,
it.
But it shows up well on screen.
It does. Yeah. That whole movie, I mean, that's really my all-time favorite.
It's great. There's so many. You could talk to 30 different people, and they'd all have a favorite scene that they just adore. And there's so many special little moments in it. And I think that it's a really just a special movie. I think that we're lucky to have it. We can call it a classic, and that it's there aren't many like it, or there hasn't been up to this point. They're different, you know. It takes a lot, to really delicate balance, to go dark humor and go really scary, you know, painful horror. And I think Rob pulls it off.
So one of my buddies on Facebook, Steve Moreline, he says, like, Rob Zombie, the man, the legend, how does he come up with this stuff? He wants to know, when you're working with him and he cranks the violence notch up to like a level 11, like, how does it feel?
You know, I would tell Steve, because I would guess that Steve's probably attended one of Rob's shows. We all know he's a rock musician.
Yeah.
Never more than right now. I mean, he's out touring. He's got his new album. So if you go to one of his shows, you feel the energy that Rob brings to the stage. And that's the same energy that he brings to the set to direct. And so when he's offering what he's looking for, the intensity of his directing, his presentation of what he's looking for, is really high. So when he says, I want you to fucking stab him, then you're like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That's it.
Awesome.
So you recognize where that's coming from, or where it needs to come from you and from this character that he's written. Because most of these characters that Rob's built are machinations of himself in some form or fashion. So he's great. He's really professional, really prepared, really passionate. All he wants is the job to be done right, whatever that takes. And then he knows what he wants, and he wants what he knows. It's that simple. And it's served him, you know. And I think that's part and parcel why he brings back a certain ensemble cast, because he knows these players will provide for me what I'm looking for. He kind of does the frame of the house, and he lets us drywall and do the finish, put the the floorboards in and paint the interior and fine tune it. And, you know, that works. It also gives him the opportunity to work with new people. You know, for instance, a guy, you know, he was just getting to know Malcolm McDowell in the Halloween that I had done for him. But he had a certain amount of us, Danny Trejo and myself, that he knows he can just, I can push play and these guys are going to go deliver. And he does expect you to bring something to the party. So don't show up without a game plan, because he doesn't want to have to give you one. And, you know, I think all those things have just helped him. Plus, he's a good storyteller.
Yeah.
And if he tells stories in all of his music, and he has done, and he's been great at directing. His music videos for this new album are fantastic. They're great.
Hey, Lou, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Real quick before I do, my co-host from The Hollywood Outsider, who's like the biggest movie nerd I know on the planet,
nice.
He wanted me to say hi to you.
Oh, hi.
What's his name? His name is Aaron.
Aaron, how goes it? Two A's.
And right? He also wanted me to say that he liked you in Longmire.
Yes, that's so cool of him to say that, and I appreciate that. I did Longmire last year, and I haven't done it yet this year. My character apparently is still out there. Longmire, it's interesting because, Sean, you introduced me from Walker, Texas Ranger. And Longmire is sort of this generation's Walker, Texas Ranger, a lawman in the big country. And sometimes when we live in an area, and you're not close, but closer than we are, Scott, in mm-hmm. Illinois, but a place, this takes place in Wyoming. It's based on some novels. Sometimes people, a huge area with low populations, they take authority into their own hands. And so you need a sheriff to kind of keep things in line, and that's Sheriff Longmire. And they've moved to Netflix now, mm-hmm. which has really served them and their storylines, because they don't have to be so episodic that they tie everything up from beginning, middle, and end per episode. They can carry storylines running. And that's opened them up, and I think they're doing a better job. I adore being on that show and doing that show. I had a lot of fun working with their cast, Robert Taylor, Katie Sackhoff, and Lou Diamond Phillips. They're just, fantastic. So I'd like to go back and do some more work on that. And we shoot that in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is a beautiful place, by the way. And that show does really well. So to Aaron, thanks for being cool. I had a scene where I had to line dance, kind of my achy breaky heart type of performance, with the lovely, vivacious Katie Sackhoff and on a date. And she was excellent at it, but that shit's not as easy as it looks, y'all. To try to do that and talk and sort of act, it was challenging. But she was great. I was mediocre, but good enough to pull it off and then get tackled by her. So, hey, Aaron.
My question is going to sound like a total jerk question to ask,
yeah,
because
please.
so don't be offended by me.
We all need those questions.
No. I mean, because you're our guest, and I'm going to ask you about somebody else. So I don't want you to take this the wrong way.
No,
but
I'm not.
I've been a big fan of Rob Zombie since the White Zombie days, and listened to his music growing up as a kid. And my only knowledge of him is what I see in the music videos or on the album covers and what he's produced in these movies. So I kind of want to know from you, what is he like really like? Is he that scary in real life, or is he just like the super sweet guy deep down, or,
He's a super sweet guy deep down. He's really focused. If we were all as focused as Rob, we would all be Rob Zombie. We would be rock stars and movie stars and directors. We'd be our dreams. He is passionately driven by his taste. You know, so interesting because we get down to that. And so often you're either a taste maker or you're a taster. And this tastes good. I like it. Or, you know what? Everyone's going to love this. And that's the Rob. And Rob does things based on his upbringing. He's fundamentally a child of the 70s. Mm-hmm. His sensibility is what is cool for him as a kid, starting from, you know, 10, 8, all the way up to 16. What rocks? What was cool? Monster movies. Mm-hmm. That was cool. That shit was good. Those two guys fought. You know, you didn't want to mess with them. That guy was a cowboy. So that's sort of he's a tastemaker in that way. But he's also really intelligent. He's an artist. A storyboard graphic artist, a novelist, a cartoonist, went to Parsons School of Art to make comic books, to draw, and recognize that his vision could be even expanded in the movie world. But he's a very pleasant guy. He's not like a rocker devil worshiper, motherfucker. He's not that guy at all.
Right.
He's really like the guy that you would go to a barbecue with, and you know, he'd be like, "Well, you know, fuck that. I didn't really want to do that. Now shit was racist, and I think that sucks. And I don't really, you know." He's kind of just so easy and normal that way. That being said, his world is incredibly huge in the vastness of his fan base, just his fan base alone, and he stays on top of his fan base, and that's very smart. Gene Simmons smart. Howard Stern smart. You know, he's really great in that business sense, but that business sense doesn't alter his artistic vision. So in other words, he's going to give his fan base what he knows they're going to like, not what he thinks they want. Okay. So I give him all the credit, because it's really easy to go and do something that you think is the next big thing. Rob's the guy, I know what the next big thing is. I'm going to make it.
Yeah, just do it.
And so he's that guy, and his work ethic, he's tireless. He's focused. He doesn't put up with any shit. If you're not delivering, he's just not going to have you back. And that might be like tomorrow. He might just say, "Look, I can't. It's not working with me and you, or sucks what you're doing, or I suck working with you. Whatever." I'm not just saying for actors. I'm saying for, you know, lighting, hair, makeup,
friends, family,
guitar playing. So I'm just going to banish you to the cornfield. Don't come back.
Look, I know we're related. You're my brother. But, you know, this conversation isn't working. I'm going to have to cut you
off. A little bit. I mean, we all hear those stories. But at the end
of
the
day,
the art is the child, and nothing supersedes that in the project. So he doesn't mince words or values with that. And so we're really good friends, but when we're working together, it's a work proposition. And, and so, you got to come to work. Everyone asks me, what's it like? And I'm like, it's work. It's really hard work. And because you want to deliver for him, you know, there's some guys you go to work for and you're like, well, this is all he's asking, so if I give him more, he won't know what to do with it. But with Rob, it's like, oh, man, I got to even push it farther, that envelope. Sure. So really smart. He adores his wife, Sherry Moon Zombie, and she adores him. Two people that have each other's back.
As do I.
Unbelievable. they look out. You know, no one says one bad thing about Sherry no one says one bad thing about Rob in their presence because they would just tear into you. And unapologetic for that, these two. And, you know, that's kind of rare. Rob cares for, you know, people. He recognizes nostalgia and I think bygone times. I think he's a master of innovative updating of himself. Mm-hmm. He's worried about kids not losing rock and roll, but he's not worried about a different type of rock and roll or way to hear it. You know, he's let go of the whole, hey, buy my album, buy my DVD, buy my CD. You know, hey, just get it wherever you get it, pirate it. I don't give a shit. I'll get it from the executives, my cut. Don't worry, just get it and watch it. So he recognizes the wheel continues to turn, times change more than most of us. Most of us get caught in the tar pits as dinosaurs from our past, but Rob seems to be able to forecast. And you know, I think those are real successful peoples.
Awesome. Sounds like a guy I want to meet.
No, he is a guy you want to meet. When you meet him, you'll be like, oh man, this is so easy and normal. And having a good conversation with him is really, because you recognize he's got a lot to say and a lot to offer. And it's not unlike what you're thinking at all.
Right.
He's an older dude, not older, but you know, to get up on stage, if you've seen his show, it is physically, it's just exhausting. And for him to do that night after night, which he's out doing touring. Wow. So that means he's keeping himself in shape. That means he's eating good. He's sleeping. He's not, you know, he's not rock starring. You know, he's not out drinking and you know, eating steaks and whatever. He's taking care of himself. He and Sherry both, they're vegan and entirely healthy and probably have never felt better in their entire rock and roll existence.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah, I'm proud to know them both.
So well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Lou, dude, you're a busy guy. I follow you on Facebook. I follow you on Twitter. You're always posting pictures. You're in helicopters or airplanes or something. You're doing all kinds of stuff all the time, dude. Do you ever slow down?
I do slow down, and it would seem that I'm slowing down this summer. I don't actually have a project today that I'm on. I had one that I was really interested in that's kind of – I had several actually, but the most recent one has sort of fallen through. It doesn't look like it's going to work out, and I'm sad about that because I always – everything that I read, I try to give it its due, but I actually spend a lot of time in my imagination building something of a script or a pitch that is my take, and it probably isn't actually the movie that I'm showing up to do or the television show. And I think that's sometimes unfair to the writers and the directors because I'm like, what? But no, wait, isn't that in the script? I just made all that up in my head. Oh, shoot. I don't want to do this then.
Nice.
So anyway, right now I'm on a little hiatus, and that could change any minute. But I like to stay, I like keeping the garden tilled. I like turning over. So I like getting the character, get life and then shedding that skin. And usually it's easier to shed the skin of one guy, Psycho Head and Rob Zombie film, by taking on the life of someone new. And that kind of keeps me fresh and fertile. It also, I'm recognizing there's starting to be a transition in our approach to telling stories based on our technology. I'm sure that's always been the way. I mean, we went from silent movies to talking movies. That must have been just crazy when that happened. Or we went from film to video. And now we're experiencing this world of digital platforming. And not so viscerally having a CD or DVD, I should say, as opposed to a Netflix and streaming online. And with the advent of all that transition and ways to watch things, I'm recognizing there are also now new ways to build things. And I like experiencing that to a point. We talked about ending up in the tar pits by being a dinosaur in the Ice Age. If you hold on to your absolutes, I have to have this to go work. This is how I work. It has to be this way. I think those things are changing faster. I mean, look, our cell phones, I grew up where there was a phone on the wall for 30 years. I mean, now we change these things every 6 months, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you're not at least available, I'm not saying change, but our millennials, so to speak, are wired to change. I used to think, well, they're wired for technology, but now I realize they're just wired to change. Everything can be passed off and dismissive. And I think there's some, good things about that because we become less possessive of material things. Clothes are disposable, food's disposable, cars are disposable. Everything's kind of or recyclable, let's hope. Mm-hmm. But we don't get hung up with our, oh, that's mine. That's my toy. That's
mine. I do. I definitely do.
Yeah, you do. But there's an 8-year-old two doors down the street who doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just not wired that way. So that is a bit of the reason why I try to stay busy with work. I also think there's a story to tell. I like to change my storytelling skill set. So I try to spin it as often as I can, as opposed to doing the same guy in and out. Like you mentioned Wicked Blood, which I adore that movie.
That was a great movie.
And I adore the work that I was able to do in that movie, and unlike any work I had done before. And so I really appreciate that. Unstoppable was another movie where I was able to serve the story in a different way than I had served stories previous. So all these things are reasons that I like to stay working, stay fresh, keep the garden green, keep the field tilled and plant a new crop and harvest a new crop, you know?
In Wicked Blood, I remember, Wicked Blood was you were like Abigail Breslin's uncle in that movie.
Yes,
right?
Yes. By the way, Rob Zombie, a sweetheart, a dear friend, did not have to throw us Dragula, which he did, of which I got to dance as a meth.
That's what I was gonna get to, man. You do meth and then you just rock out. You're like I turn the music
and
up.
And so I tried to really, having been to several of Rob's concerts, I tried to just kind of connect with what his energy is with me on set, but more what his energy is on stage, because it's really something to behold. And then transition that into this. I've never done meth, but I'm told it's like fireworks in your system, and you're just like a rocket. And to channel that energy into that level, and provide that, and so. That was so great because I like to work sometimes where I have a soundtrack or in a film, there's a song that is my theme song for the film. And so for that movie, it was Dragula. For this movie that I did 31 for him, it would be something like Black Betty, the Ram Jam.
Black Betty, Black Betty.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So those things sort of inform my character or my energy or my whole physicality showing up to set in my earbuds that morning. And those are things that I've found become serviceable. And so I never use the same song twice. I change it up. A good idea would be for all these movies is to put out a compilation disc like a tape that you made your girlfriend back in the day.
A mixtape
of all my music that's informed me for the character in that movie. And
you should, man. You could probably market that.
That would be very interesting.
Every actor should do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Every actor should. And you'd be surprised how, you know, like for Rob, for instance, Rob has great music. I mean, you've listened to it. You go to the gym, you'd be surprised how many of these buff, you know, meatheads are cranking reps to Rob Zombie music. But Rob never uses his music in his own movies. He just doesn't do it. And because he finds better attachment with other music that he's found. You know, with Devil's Rejects, it was so interesting because he knows that I love music and I like music and play a little music, that he thought it would be really interesting to have Banjo and Sullivan, who were a band, a country band, a bluegrass band, put out an album. So he asked me if I could do that, and I thought about it, and I said, yes, I could, and I wrote 10 songs, and we went to Perdinalis, which is Willie Nelson's studio, and recorded an album called Banjo and Sullivan Custom Classic. And then Rob at the time was doing a radio show, 103, with Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, here in town. He was hosting, and he would play songs from that album, and people would call in and say, yeah, I remember Banjo and Sullivan. They were kind of this left-thinking, free-spirited, outside-of-the-box band. They would open up for the Allman Brothers in the 60s and the 70s. And Rob was like, yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the movie comes out, and it was all a spoof. But, yeah, I wrote some – I got a record deal with Universal out of that, and I wrote some songs like I'm at home getting hammered while she's out getting nailed, or
that sounds like a country song.
Yeah, Dick Soup, or I Don't Give a Truck, or – She didn't like me, but she loved my money. Or I'm trying to quit, but I just quit trying. Oh, and so it was really great. It was a lot of fun. And Rob used some of that music. And, you know, he's just got a good sense of great music, like in The Devil's Rejects, all the lovely songs he used and the Terry Reid music that he used. And I think the artistry of what he does in total is impressive. And I think, you know, that's it. Someday, or as I continue to do this work and work with new filmmakers, I realize what Rob does is really special. And young people aren't afforded the opportunity because we have a sense of disposable and quick turn and burn, like a lunchtime diner. Those young filmmakers aren't getting the opportunity to learn their craft as much, or to learn their craft in its entirety as much. They don't have the same day. So what used to be 30 days to build something and to edit and to film and score, you know, now you might get 20, and those 10 days are vital. So I do come to appreciate, if I can just swim in the tar pit here for a minute, I do appreciate some of the lions and eagles that I've worked with in that captain's chair, Rob Zombie or a Tony Scott, for God's sakes, with Domino, Unstoppable, Deja Vu, or a Gore Verbinski, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, Rango, Lone Ranger. You know, these guys, they may, in shooting on film, Rob Zombie, Alejandro Iñárritu in 21 Grams. You know, this guy wins an Oscar every time he goes out. Alphonse Cuarón, I have a movie called Desierto coming out with him. So these guys are really special, and that I've had the opportunity to work with them is validation enough that they would select me to be part of their world, and that I've just watched them. I mean, we're watching, you know, these are Greek gods, you know, working at that level. So when I go work with new people, then I observe, and I think this guy could be really great if he wasn't under the gun to deliver as he is. And that's just today's press. You know, people say it's easier because there's so much more opportunity. It is. But you got to be really good. I think you have to be better today than you've ever had to be, because there's more opportunity, but there's more people doing it.
You got to
put yourself out there even further ahead of the pack.
So when you work, like I see you going on a movie that's probably less restricted on time than if you go for a TV show where they literally have to have these episodes out. They have to have them edited out before the season comes out. Does it feel like a more stress-filled environment?
Depending on the show, like you brought up Scott, thankfully, through Aaron, your partner, Longmire has a real relaxed, it's not relaxed in that the work's not getting done, but it's just not the pressure to, I don't know, it's just maybe it's flying under the radar a little bit. There's just more of a familial. I don't want to say that. It's different. I don't even know how to say it compared to The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
where there's a hell of a lot of pressure to deliver every episode bigger and better than the previous week. And that, people ask me about that all the time. That's work. That's real work, like Rob Zombie work. That's a slow trot from setup to setup. You've got 10 days to make 8. So in other words, out of 10 days, you only work 8 of those days. You have to deliver that episode. It's an outdoor location. It's in the heat and the humidity, sun exposure, dehydration, bugs, just every obstacle you can think of. And you know, they start in the summer and they finish in the fall, so they're losing daylight. So that 10-hour day all of a sudden is getting diminished. Every day, you know, we start losing our summer into the fall. And it is a lot of pressure to deliver. And it's a very physical show, obviously. It's location driven. And the requirement to just absolutely, we must get it right, starting at the quarterback, Andrew Lincoln, Rick Grimes, mandatory. It's, he must have it right. So, but the thing with this show, everybody's pulling on the same side of the rope, and I've never experienced where it's just such a absolute team, from the producers to the writers to the directors to the cast to makeup to hair to the vanities to the wardrobe to the camera electric to sound to score. Everybody is on the same page, and everyone is trying to help deliver and with the same goal, and it really serves the show. It's a great family. You're brought in to participate. You're not brought in to be placed at your level as, you know, this is what you do, don't get in the way. And you're brought in to help. And so it's an amazing experience, one that I've never had. And I don't want to say, I wouldn't want to compare the two when I reference television to like Longmire or, but I think the thing with Walking Dead is so special, and I know why, but it seems so simple to say, but it's just, it's hard to relate. But yeah, it's great. Look, in the very beginning, Andrew Lincoln, John Bernthal, and Sarah Wayne Callies, those three started that show thinking that it was going to be 6 episodes, we'll be done, never have to see this again or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the very best that we can do. The very best. A zombie show? All right. And Frank Darabont. And God bless them. They put it out there every day. And that set the tone. It's never changed. Giving it their every bit all. And when you're brought to the show, somebody from the cast typically – Lincoln, Andy, comes to you and explains to you what's required.
In his British accent, right?
in his British accent.
And, which is so weird when you hear that. I'm so used to hearing him like Rick Grimes, like these guys, don't mess with us, you know?
He's great, and the show is great.
So you came into The Walking Dead season 3,
Yeah.
Right. That's like right when the show really started picking up. The prison season. You and Tyrese. You played Axel for the for the people listening. Lou played Axel, and then Tyrese is who's Tyrese the actor?
Well, Chad Coleman played Tyrese.
Chad Coleman.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we came into the season. It was so interesting, Scott and Sean. You know this, that season one was getting started. Season two was rather self-contained at Herschel's farm.
Yeah.
He didn't branch out much. And there weren't a lot of players. So when we showed up in the prison, season three, we were five new faces of these prisoners. And for not just the show, but for the cast, it was like, oh my God, more humans, new humans. Danger. And we were a reference point of where, you know, obviously things to come. And so at that point, there wasn't things like Alexandria or Woodbury or Terminus or Hilltop or all this that's going on where it's really expanded exponentially, where I don't even know how the writers keep up with all the players. But so it was really kind of fresh. And so those five prisoners, and it was fun. And we were newbies, but really being brought in to serve the show. And it was such an experience. I had no idea. You know, I had done a lot before The Walking Dead, so I'd had a career, and I had never experienced anything like it, and haven't since. And I had no idea of the visibility that I would ultimately have and do have from The Walking Dead. I got coffee at Starbucks this morning, and the girl was like, oh, my God, are you Axel? And I'm like,
yeah,
oh, my God,
cool,
I am. And don't mess up my coffee. But yeah, it's been really phenomenal, and I guess it. We say this often, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And people ask me, well, what did you take from it? Like, you got your prison or your crowbar? You know what I took was friends, lifelong friends, like Vincent Ward, who played Oscar, my prison mate. You know, those experiences, or a real friendship. I had known Norman Reedus before, but you know, we spend a lot of time on set and dinners and whatnot, and continue to do so since. There's an Andy Lincoln and Sarah Wayne Callies and Bernthal and Dave Morrissey. Those are all friends that I could call on anytime and say, hey, how you doing? So I think that we've been through all a certain something that connects us forever. Or Scott Wilson, for goodness sakes. My gosh, that's so, you know, such a delight. So
that's so awesome. And I have to say, when you popped into The Walking Dead, I thought for sure, first impressions, you were bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that was the tone that I would say this, I always reserved in the closet some fangs that if we wanted to break out a storyline, which we did talk about, where we were going to kidnap Beth and take her into the woods, Axel was, and the surviving group, Rick and his gang, were going to have to come and find us. And that's why we kind of kept buttoned up, and we didn't show all the Aryan tattoos and whatnot that may have been lasciviously lurking. But in general, we didn't get to that point. We really got to where the governor was showing up at the prisoner, and he had to draw blood. You know, he had to draw first blood, and so I drew the short straw on that, unfortunately. So I always feel like we didn't get to finish Axel's storyline or his life, that arc, but I'm very proud of what we did do, and just happy how we did it, and how it you know, how we ended, how we landed on it.
Were you in the dark about your death, or did they let you know like pretty early, or they
let you know? For me, it was 3 weeks in advance, and for me, it was just an awareness. We haven't decided yet. There was a lot of controversy about who it was going to be. The showrunner at the time, Glenn Mazar, said, look, we don't know it's going to be you, but it feels like you're in the mix.
Oh, that so stressful. Said, you feel like people are plotting to murder you.
Yeah. That being said, there's some regulars, some of the people that are series regulars that we're also considering. So when it did happen, you know, the very first thing that you do is you do this denial dance, I call it. You try to come up with an alternative like, hey, why don't we kill Alan, that asshole? you know, no, he's not established yet. We've got to make it hurt. So after that, you acquiesce to committing to doing your character service and honoring with good work as well as the audience. And so they tell you and they ask you not to say anything because they want the cast to know, to tell each of the cast. So then the cast finds out and they come to you and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, man. Aww. And then you're like, you have no idea, dude, how close it was to being you. So then you just try to go do a really good job, which I felt like we did. They had kindly asked me to, if I wanted to be involved in writing the episode or, you know, be attached to that scene. I said, no, you guys do so well. Don't let me mess it up. But I would say, let's make it as shocking as possible. I had remembered seeing the Zapruder tapes of Kennedy's assassination, President Kennedy, and I thought that headshot was shocking. So I thought that would be great. And I think it was. I saw the other day on a website that Axel's death was one of the most shocking, voted number one, which I thought was great. But they're all shocking in their own way.
You know, I think
when we come back, to start this next season, we'll all be waiting and we'll all be shocked, even though all of us have our theories as to who's Miss Lucille.
I heard they filmed like everybody dying to keep everybody in the dark. Like, we have multiple shots of everybody dying. And then, so I don't even think they know until next season.
Well, I don't, I for one can say that I don't. And another thing I would offer is that, you know, having left the show, I still watch, but I see it now from the perspective of an audience member, which is really great.
Yeah.
When I'm out to dinner with everyone or go have drinks or something, I'm like, I don't really want to know what you've been doing at work. You know, so don't talk about it, please, because I'd just rather watch it and see it like everyone else. I feel like we all really, we think we want to know, but we don't. You know, that's part of the joy of all this. It's called fishing. It's not called catching, right? You know, it's hide and go seek, not hide and go find. And so I think that human nature is to think we want to know, but the reality is we love the puzzle of it. We love the search.
Yeah, it's got to, I can imagine, like, I've obviously never worked on a set of a show or a TV or a movie or anything, but, you know, I have worked at, like, a Baskin Robbins for 3 years
when I was younger. Very similar, yeah.
And not really, but when you leave that job and you come back one day for ice cream, it's weird being on the other side of the counter.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, you're the old guy who, you know, hey, you know, I opened this place 5 years ago. grand opening. I was right where you are, kid. And so there is a little of that. And what's interesting, we go out and do these conventions. So we meet everybody. And it's a bit like a family reunion, but you're meeting a lot of stepbrothers. And, you know, like, I don't know you, but my dad apparently is married to your mom, you know. So it can be kind of strange. And they've just expanded so much. There's so many more people now than there ever was. So.
I got a question here from Joseph Anthony Pitt.
All right, Joe Pitt.
He says, have you ever had the shit, not literally, scared out of you on the set? Being in a prison full of zombies would creep me out.
Well, yeah, if he's talking about The Walking Dead specifically, you know, that prison environment was all new. So we were all learning that set day to day because they had built it. That wasn't an existing set. That's a soundstage studio, but very, very authentic. So there were alleys or tunnels or hallways that we would go into we had never seen.
Oh, neat.
You'd be lost. Like, you'd be entirely in the wrong place that you shouldn't be, and it would be dark, and you'd be like, oh, my God, how am I going to get out of here? But typically, there's been times, like on the Lone Ranger, riding hard across the desert, balls to the wall, and heading towards a cliff, and being filmed long lens with Army Hammer leading the charge as the Lone Ranger, there were some times I was like, we're going to ride off the cliff.
Oh, so you're actually out there on horses riding full speed.
Yeah, and so there's been times. So I would say that Joe Pitt, I'd be more scared at that moment, wondering if the – I knew that we shouldn't ride over the cliff, but I didn't know that my horse knew that. So I was on the reins white-knuckling a little bit for sure. There's been times I think where I put myself physically in – harm's way that I've made myself a little nervous, scared. One of my first jobs on Walker Texas Ranger, I did a baseball slide under a propeller of a small airplane, a little Cessna in a hangar. And
you actually did that? I mean, is that
did that? Yeah, as a stunt, and that I shouldn't have done. But the stunt guy was like, "You could do it. You play baseball. You know what you're doing." And looking back on it, very stupid. But it's interesting with the walkers, as we call them. At first, they're very unnerving, and you know they're creepy. They look awful, and you don't want to be around them. But then you recognize that you're around them all day, and you kind of get used to them and a little desensitized. And then all of a sudden, you're having lunch with them, and talking about current events, books and music.
And you're not the lunch.
Yeah, and then they leave and it's some hot chick and they're like, "Bye, Lou, see you tomorrow." And you're always like, "Who are you? You know, where, what? Oh yeah, I was the walker you were talking to." And you're like, "Oh my God," because they're just, you know, so well done. And
you clean up nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is rather bizarre, and you do have a bit of a desensitization to some guy with half his jaw missing out there. But yeah, that can be scary. That's a good question, Joe. Sometimes in a fight scene, there's been times where the heat of the moment gets away from you and it gets a little scary. Some guy wielding a chainsaw. Dude, I get a little nervous about who I've become.
That's I can imagine your life. It seems so fascinating to me. I mean,
yeah.
I just work a regular general labor job, and I listen to podcasts, and I get to watch the movies and all these TV shows that you put out. And for me, as an audience, it's member, just a watcher, it's so different from the stuff that you get to do, and I'm always fascinated by that.
It is an interesting, you know, lifestyle, and it's a perspective. You know, the one thing I would say is that the more you keep your imagination available to you, the better things are. You know, it's a reason you have it, not unlike your muscles. You got to keep them in use, and they will serve you. And so I think that if you keep your imagination, attend to it. You know, it's okay to receive things, but you got to put things out too. You know, what if it had done, you know, questions, I guess, are good. So I try to keep my imagination as fresh as possible so that I'm able to bring it to my storytelling.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I got a couple more questions. We're at like an hour and 15. So I'm just
cool. Making Let's sure keep going. Know. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, let's see, from Gidget, she does the XD experience. Actually, she met you at, Walker Stalker Con.
Oh, very cool.
And you did an intro for their podcast as well, but she just said she says, "Lou, you are love and you are the nicest person I've ever met."
Oh, that is so sweet. Thanks, Gidget. I appreciate that. I feel the very same thing about you and your cool name, Gidget. And I'm wondering, if your name's Gidget, do you go by Gidge? And, you know, how annoying is it that people are always throwing Gadget at you?
Yeah.
From like Chippendale?
Yeah, Gidget and Gadget. She should marry Gadget. And then it's like Inspector Gadget, and then it's not. But Gidget's super cool, and Gidge, and she just seems like somebody that would show up with a cool mystery mobile, and you'd head down to the beach in San Luis Obispo after having been in Colorado.
She is. Gidget's super cool.
A beach van full of Mexican lettuce. Yep.
Yeah, so her and Mike do the XD experience. And
well done, Mike. You got a good partner there. You're lucky, man.
That's his sister.
Yeah. See, he's grown up with Gidget, so it's old hat for him.
Super awesome podcast. They since they got the pre-built connection.
Does anyone notice Scott's still not wearing a hat? But you and I are.
I can go grab one.
It just feels like there's one in the closet back there. So.
Yeah.
I left my closet open again, Sean. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's one of my OCD.
Just keep waiting for someone to come out, but.
So
we talked about the short hair thing.
Here's a serious question.
No one's getting that reference, right? You know, you must be a lesbian because you got the short hair.
Scott does look like a lesbian, though.
That's the Axel code.
Well, I'm a lesbian trapped in a man's body.
Code of disclaimer. All right, serious question.
Serious question. Before I ask that, I'm going to post a couple of pictures here. Lou, are you married?
Yes.
Okay. That might stun our question a little bit, but doesn't matter. We're going to have fun with this. Here we go. Let me see. Where's my pictures at? Pictures. Before I do that, I got to post. I'm going to add a couple pictures here. Okay. So this is from.
Am I seeing those?
They're in the chat box where you typed earlier.
Okay. I'm waiting. I'm looking.
Are they popping up yet? You might need to push that little dialogue thing that's in the bottom right corner to pop open the chat.
Right. Okay. So, to view this, go shared photo.
Oh, I have to. You can't just look at it? That sucks. What's Skype doing to us right now? It's ruining the flow.
It wants me to put in my ID, I guess.
Oh, that's dumb. Well, that ruins it.
It doesn't, but here I'm trying it, and okay, I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
That is Maggie Carr. Maggie Carr, she's an actress. She does a live sitcom. Fucking gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
I love Maggie Carr. She has an awesome personality. She's a horror fanatic. She loves The Evil Dead so much that she made a short film called Maggie versus The Evil Dead.
I'm going to check out Maggie Carr, man. That's very cool. Yeah, where does she live?
She lives she's on the East Coast. She's in Pennsylvania, I believe.
She's an East Coaster.
So her question for you is...
It's so interesting because I just sort of tried to Google her and I get a prison jailhouse informant testifies Maggie Carr serving a life sentence for the role in the murder of wealthy English businessman Geraldine Graham. Maggie right. is that's great.
Maggie wants to know if you will marry her.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Hell yes. She's in prison. What do they call that?
Conjugal visit?
Yes. I've never been on that side of a conjugal visit. So, yes, can do. Tell her absolutely. But we got to get her out of prison. Tell her to hit me up on Twitter. Lou Temple Actor. Do you think Maggie's a Twitter person?
Yeah, Maggie, she's at Mag the Car. At Mag the Car on Twitter.
They let her have Twitter in prison?
Yeah, definitely not in prison. She's super cool. She does like a live sitcom. I had her
Has she been a guest of this show?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
I had her on. And
she
I
did
asked
awesome
her
YouTube video. Right? Her,
yeah. She made that short film. It's called Maggie vs. Evil Dead. It's only like 4 minutes. Really cool video. And I had asked her if she had any questions. She just wants to know if you'll marry her. That's it.
Yeah,
man.
The answer is absolutely. In Mexico. I think Mexico would be the place that we do that. Because our nuptials will be so much more legit.
If you can't tell, Lou is like concentrating on these pictures or something on the internet. He is researching Maggie Carr right now.
I've got my Maggie, attending rap sheet down. I was a little nervous when I saw her in prison. Clearly she has a good lawyer. she's out by now.
You should just tweet her right now, just like without her hearing this episode, and just go, yes, I will marry you, just to freak her out.
Oh, she would be so excited. Maggie has got the greatest personality, man. She's beautiful.
She's, well, how come, what are you waiting for? What's the problem here?
She's probably taking, look at me, man. I would never get a girl like Maggie Carr. She's way above my level.
I think you're not giving yourself enough credit. But you are giving her proper, I'm tweeting right now. Sorry, audience.
No, yeah. Are you tweeting at Maggie Carr, Mag the Carr?
Yes.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic.
Mag the Carr. Yes, I.
This is so awesome.
Bill. In nuptial. Yes, I will. For your nuptial. Can I spell that? Help me with that, Scott. Nuptial.
Scott's the teacher.
They spell it for you.
That's a word I've never actually spelled.
N-U-P-T-U-A-L.
Excited. Excited for the registry.
And this is so exciting. This is fun. We're already at like an hour 23, so we'll kind of wrap up.
Sorry about all the mayhem with Mag the Carr.
No, man.
This is awesome.
Mag the Carr is exceptionally attractive, exceptionally talented. You know, they say you fall in love with talent. That's what they really say. So, you know, she must be wildly talented. I don't doubt.
Yeah, maybe one day you guys will wind up in a movie together. And not that kind of movie.
Yeah, not the prison visit. That's the name of a movie, right?
I've seen that one. There's actually four sequels. No, wait.
What would the name of that movie be? The conjugal visit? There's got to be a movie called that, right?
It's got to be.
Prison love, prison move, prison love.
It'd be Lou versus Maggie Carr.
Lou versus Maggie Carr. Parking in the rear? That was... Wow.
Additional parking in the rear.
Yeah, we really lost it now. Interesting story about the prison and going to the bathroom. I've never been to prison like our friend Maggie Carr, the beautiful Maggie Carr. But I have worked with Danny Trejo, who we all love, and he's fantastic. And when we were doing Halloween, Rob's first Halloween, and playing in the Smithville as orderlies at the Sane Asylum, Danny and I were partners, and Danny had been telling me a story about how to do a number two, or actually any bathroom break in the prison. You have to actually take your pants entirely off.
What?
And your underwear too, and you hang them up. What? And you go like a little, you know, like a 6-year-old boy. And
that's not normal.
No, only at a nightclub, only at a fancy nightclub. But the reason is, if someone's going to come and shiv you, and you've got a break for it, you don't want to get caught with your pants down around your ankles, and that's where that term came from, because you'll trip and fall. So you'll notice then. And these are the types of things I sort of build into my world, in my story, in the scene where we're raping the young lady in Michael Myers' cell, Courtney Gaines and myself, and my pants are down around my ankle because I'm doing the dirty, and Michael Myers decides to come after me and chases me down the hall, and I can't get away because my pants are tripping me up. So I sort of put Danny Trejo's good advice into play.
Danny Trejo, what an interesting dude.
Yeah, so interesting, because he did spend a little time out there.
How do you prepare for a scene that is focused on rape? It must seem so, like, difficult.
You know, that's the type of thing we talked about with Rob, is that, you know, these aren't things that you typically do. So you have to go into your imagination and go to a place where you're not your best person, and you find your worst person. And then getting back to Rob, he makes sure that whatever it takes to make that scene work, he does. And he makes it better to get that done. But at the end of the day, he wants all the work to be very unsafe. And when we talk about that, to be unwieldy, so that we don't know what's going to happen, and that's what, you know, great art comes from dangerous situations.
Yeah, it seems so interesting.
Like, yeah, that's a difficult place to actually go to and to pull that off. And I was having a hard time, to be honest. But you know, I was working with Malcolm McDowell at the time, who had done Clockwork Orange, obviously, and he was talking about, like, look, it's your job, you must do this, and you've got to pull this off. I think if you have to play Hitler, then that's your job. You must do it. Yeah, and that's, we find these things that are in us that we don't really like to shake up much, but you know, that's where we have to go. So I give a lot of people credit for doing what they do.
Yeah.
All actors, actually, and musicians, for putting it out there, you know, cutting a vein and bleeding in front of the audience.
Yeah, there's some movies where like Straw Dogs, Last House on the Left,
yeah,
I Spit on Your Grave, with these long, like 5 minute intense, just focused in rape scenes. I'm like, how did they get into those scenes? I mean, for the female and the guys, you know, like,
yeah.
And then when you get off, are you like, wow, I feel dirty, I need to take a shower.
Yeah. And you feel like you feel like either you've let yourself down because you've gone there, and you would never think you'd be the type of person that could get into that place, or you feel very validated that you found a way to get there. And sometimes you kind of experience both of those things, a bit of a lift, a high of just accomplishing something that's very difficult, but then a real low and a letdown that, I just did something, you know, really awful.
Do you ever see yourself on screen and feel self-conscious?
I judge my work. I recognize, oh, look, I'm just doing this or I'm doing that. I recognize my bag of tricks that I might do. And I'm like, but I don't judge my intentions. I always recognize my intentions on screen, and I recognize they're typically in the moment, and I'm okay with those. I don't find false moments in my work.
I do every episode I put out of this podcast, I think, damn, I could have done that better. I should have sounded.
Oh, I think there's always that. That's just being critical. But if you really look at yourself and say, what was I trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
I was, you know, look, life's about focus. If you can just have a moment of focus, not entire moments, just a moment, just every 60 seconds, if you can bring three of those to focus, you'll find success.
Yeah, I just get wrapped up in my head. Like, sometimes I get so down on myself, I'll take
my... That's why you got Scott.
Scott's my rock. Scott helped me kick... He actually helped me kick off, like, the very first episode. Every once in a while, he'll come on, and when I got, you know, we have someone to talk to, so we'll just kind of chat it up. Scott's always around. He's always down to podcasts. One of the guys I could look to.
Well done, thanks, Scott. Nice.
Good, like to have him on. Sean's a good guy.
Right. I can tell these two SNS guys got each other's back.
I feel like we need a little heart with an S.
Yeah, like the SNS carved on an oak tree. Yes.
Yeah, like an arrow going through it.
I'm
we're talking about coming out of the closet earlier.
Man.
Maybe I just did.
All right, Scott, dude, it's all out in the open now.
There we go.
It's
no longer a secret.
So I got one last thing. Angie Freeman, who is Sean Freeman's wife.
Love Angie.
She just said, I love Lou. He was always great on ZombieCast.
Thank you, Angie. It's so nice. And Sean's super cool. And both of you are as well. And, I think it's important to keep being, you know, I do these because I want to be available to the audience, and I want the audience to be available to me. as well. So I think that's important, and I typically appreciate the conversation, and I think that it gets to become rather regular, you know, mm-hmm. we're regular, you know, everyday people. As the song says,
it's always nice to get like talk to actors, someone who like you, who's always you're in the industry, and to get like just an actual hangout conversation with. That's what I like about podcasting, rather than we're on a radio show. Hey Lou, this, you know, and you got to like you got to drop your lines quick. You got to seem snappy. You got to, you know, you got to be full of energy. Rather than like, this is how I hang out. I'm just relaxing. I'm hanging out with the SNS crew. Horribly awkward, getting horribly awkward, and we're just talking, which is neat.
Yeah,
and we've had some awkward moments, Maggie Carr.
Oh, Maggie, so beautiful, so beautiful.
I'm excited. You notice that Sean didn't ask me to be on that episode.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but I was, but I can see why.
Yeah, obviously. Exactly.
Yeah. Scott would just be drooling the whole time. I don't need that.
Thanks so much for being here, man. It was a genuine pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Scott, Sean. It's been a pleasure. I would say to your audience, hey, keep tuning in to horriblyawkwardpodcast.com and see what great guests or conversationalists show up next.
Yeah, super cool. So
you follow me?
Yeah, you follow me. I was wondering if you could do like a quick plug after we're done here right now. Okay,
will do.
Let's wrap it up, guys. We're at the end of the show. Ayo, Freeman.
Yo, what's up, Iams?
Dude, what's left to do?
Down there, man. Wrap it up, son.
Yeah, I'm social media, I guess. Like we mentioned, Lou Temple Actor on Twitter, which I tend to. The Facebook page is a Lou Temple fan page, which I don't do. But the people that administrate it get the information to me. IMDb, Lou Temple is always a good place to figure out what I've got coming up. What I got coming up, as we mentioned, Rob Zombie's 31 in September. I have a cool movie in September coming out as well called Shangri-La Suite, which is about killing Elvis in 1974. It's really kind of interesting. I play Dennis Hopper in that movie. That's cool. I have a movie called Desierto I made mention with a guy named Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who happens to play this this new guy Negan with a baseball bat. I love baseball. Gael Gael Garcia's in this movie, and it's directed by Alphonse and Jonas Cuarón. And another movie coming out in December called Kidnap, where it's I take Halle Berry's son and she wants him back, and so that becomes a bit of a full-on action thriller. And so a lot of cool stuff in the pipeline, and I'll keep doing cool stuff. There's a movie I'm excited about called Feral with Scout Compton Taylor and Renee Olmsted, and directed by my friend Mark Young, who also did direct Wicked Blood as well. So I'm seeing good things for that. So that's exciting, and that's what I have. So check me out. Follow.
Yeah, awesome. you know my friend Ted, our Ted Bracewell, you know him from ZombieCast. He actually went and did some extra work recently with Scout Taylor or Scout Compton. What's her name?
Scout Compton Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You did some stuff. I wonder if that's the movie. I'm not sure.
It might very well have been. No doubt. It was here in Los Angeles is where we shot.
Yeah, he was filming something in some diner. He played the guy who would get up and go use the restroom.
We always need that guy.
All right, Scott, man, go ahead and plug your stuff real quick.
Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm one of the co-hosts on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, which is all about movie and TV news and entertainment. And as much as I do love movies, gaming is my passion, and I'm actually the one of the co-hosts on the Gaming Outsider, where we talk about video games and converse with our community on that podcast as well.
Wow.
We try to keep gaming in a positive light. So.
Yeah, well, please do. Yeah.
And you guys know the Horribly Awkward Podcast can be found on the BS Podcast Network. So go over to bspodcastnetwork.com and listen to all the great shows over there, which are Pure BS Podcast, Real Stupid Podcast, XD Experience, Accidentally the Whole Tip, that's the real name, Bitches Who Do Work, that's the real name, Dropping Loads, that's a real name, and Geek Dig. And you can also find me on Twitter at awkward_podcast or at they call me Iams. This is my personal account. And you guys can send me emails at horriblyawkwardpodcast@gmail.com. And my voicemail number is 510-600-3475. So, Lou, before I close it out, what is one thing you've learned on today's podcast?
The main thing that I've learned is don't judge a book by its notes.
Have you learned anything today, Scott?
Have I learned anything today? I have learned that
how to poop in prison.
How to poop in prison, yes. Take my pants completely off. I'm going to have to like just put that into my repertoire when it's time to move my bowels. No, I just every time I get a chance to meet an actor such as yourself, it's just amazing to me just how normal and easy it is to talk to you. Because like growing up watching movies as a kid, I've always had this picture in my head that movie stars are like in this other realm of reality, and it's just fascinating to me to just sit and have a regular good old conversation with you. So I really enjoyed the conversation.
I'm
thanks
happy to be part of that. Happy to break that veil of unavailability. Yeah, that's totally not it.
Technology's awesome.
Yes.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you so much.
Sean, what did you learn today?
Well, I did learn that prison thing, which, you know, you guys are going to come to my house and you're going to see my pants hanging on the outside of the bathroom door every time you guys come over now.
Yeah.
I definitely learned that, like, doing movies and just rehearsing lines over and over, and it's hot and sweating and you're getting angry and irritated, but you just keep doing it, and that's when the passion comes out. I obviously learned a lot about Rob Zombie, which is a lot of fascinating stuff. It's super cool. For Scott, I didn't learn anything about you because I knew everything. You're a pretty open book. You post a lot of pictures, and I get to see it all. But yeah, this is super awesome.
As Gidget would say, peace out, Brussels sprouts.
So before we get started, tell me a quick story about anything. First thing that comes to mind.
Great. I was not an actor, or I wasn't getting to work as an actor, and I was on job interviews. I was trying to secure employment, and I went on a job interview for an insurance adjuster. I knew very little about it, and I had my, you know, sport coat and tie on, and was waiting in the lobby of one of these insurance companies. I don't remember which, Aflac, State Farm, whatever. And the guy came out who went in before me, and he had sort of that ghost look on his face and offered that this wasn't a pleasant day. He said, heads up in there. And I'm like, wow, as if I wasn't nervous enough. Although having auditioned, you wouldn't think I would be, but in the civilian world, that's how it goes. So I went in, and this was a middle-aged man. He seemed cool and fairly conservative and everything, but he also was handicapped with one of those conditions where the outside of your ears were missing. Like your ear was missing. The holes were there, but the...
Wow.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And it was. And so... one of those things hard, like you got something on your lip, hard not to notice or stare at. So I just tried to really focus and answer questions. And we went through the interview process, and he was like kind of testing me, and he offered, hey, so you like it here? And I'm like, yes, very much. Yeah, I could work here. He goes, really? Okay, well, how about me? Could you work for me? And I'm like, absolutely, sir, I could. And he said, you don't notice anything strange about me? And I'm like, no. It was really baiting me. And I said, no. And he said, really? And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, what? And I said, you probably don't wear glasses. and he said, what? And I said, you got no, you know, ears. So the glasses don't work. I didn't get hired. That's my quick story.